And welcome back to Veritas. I'm Mel Fabregas with my friend directly from St. Ole Damigord. His website, lightonconspiracies.com, which is also linked on our website. Ole, you are finishing with Norway. Then I want to start dissecting Charlie Hebdo in Paris. I want to come to the Boston bombings. I want to come to the Virginia shootings and all these shootings that are taking the United States, not by surprise, because it's almost as if it's expected.
I would be very happy if we could go through the second chapter of this Norwegian drama, because it is the worst that has ever happened in the world. So it and that no one is looking into it is just incredible. So the so-called assassin, Anders Behring Breivik, is said to have taken his second car and gone north towards this island called Utøya, where the Labour Party, the Norwegian Labour Party's youth division, AUF, had their summer camp. There were more than 500 teenagers, most of them between 14 and 17, 18 years old, on the island, when he came across with this small little ferry called MS Torbjörn, and dressed as a police officer from the secret police in Norway, security police, PST. And he came up to the main building, spoke to the female leader of the island, or the one responsible for the whole thing, together with a security guard. Now, the security guard was there working extra, but he's actually the stepbrother of the Norwegian princess. So him and this woman are the two first victims, shot point blank, boom, boom, these two. So I think it's quite interesting that the royal family got a loss here as well. So from that point on, Anders Breivik is said to have pulled out a rifle and a pistol and started walking around very calmly on the island, shooting people, killing them right, left, and center. So total panic, everybody was running around, and most of these youngsters had mobile phones. So what they did, of course, was to call the police, saying, please, please come and help us, we're being shot at, and so on. So what happened? In Norway, it's 112 instead of 911. And when they called this number, for quite a few of them, they couldn't get through. And it said that that was because of overload, because of the phone system, possibly. But the few that came through was met by someone working there as a police officer. I don't know who was answering the phone this day. But they were said to be quite arrogant and saying, no, sorry, we've got there's so much going on in Oslo right now, so please don't disturb us. So they put down the receiver, and it was like they had to call back. Then the person answering the phone said, I'm sorry, we don't believe you. Please call your parents and get your parents to call us. You know, I mean, this is while people are being murdered around them. So the youngsters are trying to call their parents and saying, please, please call the police, and so on. Then when the parents try to call, the police answer and say, yeah, calm down, calm down. We're coming both in the air, by land and by boat, so don't worry. But nothing is happening, nothing is happening, nothing is happening. And for every single minute, please remember, youngsters, your child, it could be anyone, are being murdered by this maniac. At the same time, also, people on the mainland that are hearing the shooting going on say that they heard shooting going on from more than one place at the same time on the island. That would say more than one shooter. And witnesses have said from one to three, and the daughter of a high police officer said that there were between four and five people in police uniforms with weapons walking around killing people on the island. She also said that that these people have hung explosives in the trees and so on. After this whole thing went live, the daughter of this police officer have never mentioned this again. that there were more than one. We're back to the official story, the official story, the official story. That's it. But, and also the witnesses that were talking about, three, as far as I know, have left Norway because they've been harassed and so on. But many of these phone calls, unfortunately, could not get through. And this shooting was going on for more than 1 hour without any interruption, without anyone coming to the island to rescue them. Well, when finally the local police in the area, when they heard what was going on, they ran down to the car and wanted to get going. But unfortunately, the battery was flat, so they needed to find an extra battery and jumper cables before they could get going. Then at the same time, there was a police helicopter that right away when they heard about this, they called in and said, we're ready to go, we're ready to go. But they were told, stand down, no need for you. Then there was another police helicopter crew that had access to a sharpshooter. They said, we're ready to take off, we can be at the island within a few minutes, we can take him out right away. Somebody told them to stand down. I've not been able to find out who gave the order, but that was very clearly a stand down, do not take off. At the same time, there was one police who had brought his rifle, sniper rifle, and he saw the shooter walking around on the island shooting people, and he had him in the crosshair. He, at the same time, he was in contact with the police central and said, I can take him out. He was also given the order, stand down, do not interfere. Okay, so when finally the first police came to where the ferry is, they were some of them didn't manage to find where the ferry was leaving from, so they went to a small little camping instead. But when they came there, they didn't try to get to the island. I mean, there was like loads of privately owned boats there, but none. They were not. They didn't ask or did try to use them or anything like that. So, then also, like I said, the police said that we're coming by air, by boat, by anything, but did not happen. Okay, there was a police patrol in two of the. There was two different patrols in two nearby cities. They said that they had patrols that could go right away and help. They were told, stand down. Okay, there was one patrol though that left anyway, and they were told, bypass the island and drive to the next island instead. Okay, so at the same time, Norway is a NATO country. They have spent billions when it comes to training their special ops units. They're very well respected internationally for their soldiers and so on. And they have a Delta team as well, or an emergency troop for these type of events. But they were called to the island. But unfortunately, they were using a new kind of digital communication system. And the old, what the normal police had was the old, not digital, but, the old system, analogs.
Analogs, so yeah.
So they could not communicate. So unfortunately, they had to, the only way that these different...
I'm losing you for a moment. Just let's see if your bandwidth improves. Okay, go ahead. Let's see if it works better.
Well, so there were five different Delta teams this day that were part of both the operation in Oslo, but also at this island. And the drill I mentioned before actually ended 22 minutes before the bomb blew off. The drill that had more or less the exact same scenario ended 22 minutes before the real thing went live in Oslo. Go figure. Anyway, but this Delta unit, they went in different cars towards the island. But unfortunately, they were using a new digital communication system called Tetra. and the normal police was using the old analog, so they couldn't communicate with each other. So the way they did it was by fax. They used fax to try and get hold of each other, and mobile phones, email. Because also, unfortunately, there was a problem in the local phone system, Netcom's phone base station. There was a relay that had gone bad, so that the phone calls going to the real police area for this whole thing, which was called Nordre Buskerud, all calls, incoming calls there, went to another one due to this relay that wasn't working. Bad luck. Anyway, when the Delta team finally arrived, they managed to drive by where the ferry is. They didn't even see it, and they went to a camping that is a bit north of that place. So they drove down there, and instead of using the boats that were there, and at the same time, normal people were out there trying to rescue youngsters that were swimming and being shot at in the water. There was, I think in total, there was like 37 normal boats out there trying to help. Non-official boats, no police boats, no nothing, no police helicopters, nothing. Anyway, so when the Delta team arrived, what they did was they asked, where is Utøya? They were pointed out by a person there. It's that island there. So what did they do? They took off and they drove north. So they do, it's almost, I think it's about 5 miles further north where they stopped. And then they had, they were given like a rubber boat. So this Delta team, highly equipped with all the heavy equipment, you know, bulletproof vest and guns and helmets and everything like that, 10 of them gets into this rubber boat. I tell you, it's filmed. It looks like Monty Python. They're standing up in this rubber boat. So they take off. It's raining a little bit. And they take off towards the wrong island. Then when they discover that they're going towards the wrong island, they change their route. But unfortunately, since they're that many and they're so heavy, the rubber boat starts taking in water, and the water kills the engine. So unfortunately, this super train Delta troop elite force is drifting around in the water until a normal boat comes up and say, what the hell is going on? So they swap with this boat. There's another boat coming as well. So suddenly the Delta team is in two different boats going towards the island. Every minute that is being delayed, people are getting murdered. Please remember that. Also, while the youngsters and so are coming to the shore, I mean, some of them are hurt. People have been, civilians have dragged them out of the water and so on and come in with them to the mainland. The police that are there are stopping the ambulance people from going down, helping them. They're pushing them away, saying, you cannot go down there. Very, very odd. Anyway, so when the Delta team finally arrives, they don't go full speed even towards the island because they say that they were afraid of being shot at and so on. But they arrive two boats at the same time. They jump up and go ashore on the island, splits up into two groups, and then one group goes south and they find the shooter. While this whole shooting has been going on, like I said before, Anders Behring Breivik he makes two phone calls from his mobile phone to the man in charge of the police. He managed to get through to one of the top stars in the police system. And he says, my name is Commander Behring Breivik. Operation accomplished. I want to surrender to Delta team. I mean, how odd is that? Commander Breivik, I want to surrender to Delta team. How does he even know that the team is called Delta? Anyway, so the Delta team arrives to the island and they split up and they find him, calls out his name, say, put down your guns. He totally surrenders right away. He puts down his gun. He totally lies down on his stomach. They arrest him. So, I mean, I'm only scraping on the surface, but there are so many things going on this
day. I'm surprised, Ole. I'm surprised they arrested him, because usually in these events, if he's the patsy, usually they're killed on the spot.
Yeah, good one. But the thing is that after he was arrested, the timeline, the time when he's said to have been arrested, the shooting keeps on for like between 5 and 7 minutes. Go figure.
So there's another, there might be another
going this way.
Could there have been other shooters too?
That is what the witnesses talked about, between three and five shooters in total, all dressed in police uniforms, walking around killing people here. Okay, there were 11 helicopters that came to the area. All of them landed on another island. None of them, I've heard to one of the crew members that they were not allowed to cross this island, Utøya, this day. So there were 11 helicopters, none of them used. Six of them were ambulance helicopters and five from the defense. None of them were used. And also, the Norwegian War Center, it's an underground base. It's only 8 kilometers from Utøya. It's right around the corner. And so, anyway, I mean, my God. Then the police, Breivik is calling in, and the police does not call back because they say that they couldn't, because they said they couldn't see what number he was calling from. And the official story is that either he called from a phone without a SIM card, or that the phone was locked. I don't understand what that means, really, when it comes to this. But so, also, as soon as the shooting started, the leader of the youth party, his name is Eskil Pedersen, he, instead of being a leader and defending the members and trying to rescue the members of the youth party, he and his media advisor and some friends ran straight down to the ferry, took off together with the captain. This was the only route that could very easily have gotten the police over and to the island and do a rescue action. But instead of going straight towards the mainland, they went north, and they went 3 kilometers north, and then rammed the ferry up on shore so that it couldn't be used. Now, when I look at these black ops, many times they are surrounded by members of the Bilderberg Group. The Bilderberg Group is, I would humbly suggest that they are part of the shadow world government, not the top, but they're way up there. Handpicked people from all Western countries and other countries as well, with the idea that with an elect few, but in key positions, you can control a country with only a handful of people. So often when looking at these type of operations, they're Bilderbergers before, during, and after. So I looked at this one as well with the same question, would it be possible? And here we have Gro Harlem Brundtland, the former Prime Minister of Norway. She's also called the Land Mother of Norway. She is a very, very high up player in the Bilderberg Group and the elite as well. She is one of the architects behind what is called Agenda 21, together with Moya Strong. And anyone who really starts looking into Agenda 21 will just be blown away by the level of madness that is there. But that is in black and white what they're planning for the rest of us. And this has been accepted by many, many, many countries. So we really need to look into that. But anyway, she was at the island this morning. She came there early, and she left about 1 hour, a little more than 1 hour before Anders Behring Breivik is said to have come to the island. So she left. Then the other key person is the Prime Minister, that was Prime Minister at the time, Jens Stoltenberg. He's a Bilderberger. His father was a Bilderberger, Thorvald Stoltenberg, who's been involved in a lot of very, very shady businesses, very violent and so on. And Jens Stoltenberg, when you look at his behavior this day and around this thing, he's the one who he comes out on the other side as the hero, the one that unite the nation. You know, we have to stand up and not bend down in the face of terror. We have to unite the nation and not let us get scared away. All of this that they always say. But when this whole thing was going on, when the bomb had exploded in Oslo, he was officially in his private home, which is on Incognito Street in Oslo, where the Prime Minister lives. But down in the basement, there was sort of like a bomb shelter. That is where he was officially. But this is about 1 hour before the shooting starts on Utøya, and no reason to mention the island at all. But then he's being called by the local TV station, and they say they want a comment from the Prime Minister in the middle of this whole crisis. And one of the jobs I've had earlier was I made music for TV4 in Sweden, so I've spent a lot of time in the graphic department and so on. And when the news programs or the news crew are in a situation where they need live reports and so on, what they do is they call in the graphic department and say, I'm going to make a call with the Prime Minister. Please get a still photo of him. The background action can be live footage from wherever it is. And then standard procedure also is that from the graphic department, what they do is, if this is a live interview, so they write in the left corner, live from Las Vegas, live from New York, live from whatever. Here we have the same thing. This is, like I said, I think about 1 hour before the shooting starts on the island. And they call the Norwegian Prime Minister to get a comment from this crisis. So there's a photo of him, just like I said, there are live images of the smoke and the blown up building and so on. And then while he's talking about we don't know what's going on, but our hearts are there for the families of the victims and so on, and don't panic. Up in the left corner, it says, Direkt Utøya. So I would very much say that that is a smoking bomb, that I believe that he was on the island when this thing happened. There were also two unidentified black helicopters that were circling the island while this shooting was going on. Typical when it comes to black op international operations. Also, the ammo that was used was a special ammo that as far as I've been able to find out through my friend, the Norwegian journalist, it was an ammo made of the brand Silver Tip. And this is an ammo that explodes. It's more than a hollow point. It just totally explodes inside the body, making absolute maximum damage. And it's banned for private use. It's banned for military use. And the only ones, as far as my friend, that uses these are special ops with the CIA and the Mossad. This is what was used on the island. And many of the victims, when the autopsy reports were given out, it's very odd, because normally if you have somebody who's been shot and so on, you will get that there was one bullet, the caliber 22 found in the head, and another bullet, the caliber 45 from this type of weapon, and so on. Here it only says victim shot by rifle and or gun. Gun, rifle, triple shots from rifle, one shot from gun, nothing except. Also, the number of deaths was, for 2 days after this happened, the official number was 86. Then that went down to 69 after 2 days. And they say, oh, very sorry, but we miscalculated. We counted the bodies on the island twice. Also, there was...
What about that 7? What about that 77 number that is the formal one that's out there?
That's 69 on the island and 8 in Oslo.
I see.
Makes 77. Yeah. So there were also two families that received the bodies of their loved ones, and officially it said that they drowned, but then when they opened the caskets, they found that they were shot to death, and the autopsy personnel just say, "Oh, we're very sorry, we made a mistake." I mean, how can you say somebody drowned when there are big bullet holes in them?
You know, this is interesting you say that, because I want to let you finish with chapter two, if you will, but reminds me of the Tucson shooting. You probably remember a few years ago the shooting to a congresswoman here and some deaths that occur, including a federal judge, Judge John Roll. And I looked at the medical examiner's report, and even though he was shot in the stomach, the report says, cause of death, blunt force trauma to the head. The media didn't tell us about that. So then I find out that this judge knew a lot about President Obama, and all of a sudden he's conveniently killed that day. But anyway, that's a different story.
No, it's a similar story. It is, because this is the thing. When you start looking into all of these cases, I've looked into hundreds and hundreds of them, you find the same pattern appearing. And these, we're talking about bought people in the autopsy, people making that, or their own people faking these documents, or whatever it is they're doing. I just want to say also, I'm going to go back to this ferry, because Eskil Pedersen, if you remember, the leader of the youth party, he, according to some unofficial source, is actually the illegitimate son of Jens Stoltenberg, meaning that then we have three generations of at least the upcoming generation.
Hold it. I'm losing your voice. I'm losing your voice. Just give it a few seconds to see if we can get the bandwidth back. Okay, go ahead now. Okay.
Now, Eskil Pedersen, the guy who escaped very cowardly with the ferry and stranded it, rammed it right up on the shore, he is, according to some unofficial sources that I have, the illegitimate son of Prime Minister Jens Stoltenberg. So he, the one that neutralizes, the only way to get to the island, is actually related to a key player in this whole drama, if I'm right. And it also afterwards, it's very odd the way that he keeps appearing. I mean, he should have been accused of being an absolute traitor to his people. I mean, according to Norwegian law, if you leave somebody in the water without trying to rescue them, that is a crime. That is a crime. And here he is, just leaving. The boat could have taken 50 people. It was armored. They could have just lied down and helped 50 people away from the island. They were just a handful, and they took off full speed, way off, and then neutralized it so that it couldn't be used. Now, he afterwards is met by the Prime Minister with an open arm. He's hugging him, crying, holding him like it was his son. They're quite similar, their facial structure, especially with his granddad, if that is his granddad, Thorvald Stoltenberg. There are several photos of them together. Please check for yourself. Then at the memorial services in the main church in Oslo, the royal families are there. He is there. Eskil is there. And lots of other famous people and family members and so on. And here he is, Jens Stoltenberg stands up, the Prime Minister, and starts his speech with, "Your Majesty," and then, "My dear Eskil," and then, "The rest of you." You know, so it's very odd the way that he is put up on this pedestal. Also, the year after this whole thing happened, they went to there together, and then the Danish Prime Minister, who is very central in the whole Copenhagen shooting and that whole thing, she is there on the island, and Jens Stoltenberg is there, and then in between them, Eskil Pedersen. This guy again and again and again appears that, like that. So, well, I just want to say that I think it is, I can say without exaggerating, that something very, very ugly happened this day in Oslo 2011. And I'm going there again. I was almost arrested by one of the members of the Delta team at the anniversary. I'm going back there now in the end of this month to do two talks in Oslo. And I've been warned not to talk about this because it's too sensitive to mention in Norway, they say. Anything except the official story is not acceptable. And so I'm going there and I'm going to talk exactly about these things. I'm going to do two talks with one day in between so that people can spread the news and so on with friends and so on. At the same time, I'm going to try and go back to the island in the day in between and so on. So,
What is up with these laws of people just talking about what happened or what may have happened? Same thing. You're in Spain right now. You know that there's a new law in Spain where if you are a conspiracy theorist or you question government's authority, you basically go to jail. What's your opinion of that?
What's my opinion? It's absolute madness. It's like I am the new type of terrorist in their way of seeing it. Truth is terrorism. Peace is terrorism. It's come to that level. Anyone who stands up for peace will be looked upon as a terrorist. Anyone who stands up for normal harmony, balance, taking care of each other, humanity, these type of things, is being looked upon as a terrorist nowadays. It's gone totally off the markers.
I mean, this is ridiculous, Ole. I mean, this new law, for anybody who thinks that we're just, this is just theory, it's fact. The new law prohibits everything from insulting a police officer to protesting outside the country's legislature.
I live in a country where you are not allowed to make jokes about politicians or police. I mean, what does that say to you?
Of course, the question in my mind is, what are you still, and my family came from there, but what are you still doing in Spain?
What I'm still doing in Spain, it's like, I love being here. I mean, where should I go? Spain is just one country. This is so way above countries. I mean, we're talking about the New World Order. They're looking at this globally. So it's just one. They're looking to take over one country by one country by one, and they've managed in many countries already. So,
and they're using this as a beta test. They're using this as a beta test because, you know, what's happening in Spain could be happening elsewhere. Look at what happened in Australia just a few days ago, where they were actually stopping people, almost like. And again, folks, you know, I've done shows about what happened in Nazi Germany may not be what really has been portrayed, but you get the idea that we're doing the same thing in Australia. They're just stopping people randomly out there just to make sure that, you know, the news, right?
No, but it's just like you say, they're doing beta tests. That is a very, very good way of seeing it. I think they're using different countries, you know, how can we get away with it? And if you look at Cyprus a few years ago, they said, great, we have an island here. We put some military ships around it so that we have all parameters secured. Then we just shut down their bank accounts and so on. See, how do they react? Are we going to have a revolution on our hands?
Exactly.
Are they going to accept it? And so on. In Sweden, they use that as a test run place for any high-tech thing, you know, chipping, what do you call it? Digital currency thing. I mean, nowadays in Sweden, you can hardly use normal money anymore. The banks don't use cash. It's like even if you go to the local market to buy tomatoes, they will have a credit card thing. If you buy Monopoly, the game, you know, for kids, it's with credit cards. It's not with notes anymore. It's like very, very odd. And then they test it. If they can get away with it in one country, they go to the next one, they use it there. And a friend of mine used a really nice or great expression the other day. She said, in some countries, it's not the new world order, it's the nice world order. Do you know, like if you go to, I would say Sweden is such a country, Holland, the Netherlands is another country. It's just so cute, perfect, everything. Everything is beautiful on the surface. Do not scratch. Do not scratch and do not talk out or speak out or stand out, because then this thing will show its very ugly face. Do you know, I was invited as a speaker to the Open Mind Conference in Amsterdam a few months ago. It was me, Ken O'Keefe, Christopher Bolin, Ian Crane, and Frank Rasmussen from Denmark, and so on. And some of us have been critical against Israel, and people with Israeli nationalities. For me, it doesn't matter if you're blue, red, Muslim, Christian, whatever. Individuals are individuals, and they need to be responsible for what they've done, whatever it is. The same way I need to be responsible for my actions and so on. And here, I was going to talk about false flags, Christopher Bolin, 9/11, Ken O'Keefe, 9/11, and so on. And this was in Amsterdam, the most liberate capital of the world, more or less. I mean, you can smoke a joint everywhere. There are prostitutes in the windows. So when you go with your Sunday walk with your family and kids, you can have a look at them. You know, it's like that place of all should be the place to have a different, at least welcome different opinions. Here we came in total peace, and in the local newspaper or in the national media in Amsterdam, a whole smear campaign started calling us anti-Semites and Holocaust deniers, and that this needs to be stopped. And the police was there. We had to change the location.
Well, let me stop you there for 1 second, because I before the thought leaves, this is one law that I can never understand. Just questioning any historical event, why would that be illegal? Unless they are scared that people may find out that it was actually not to the extent they portray. And you know exactly what I mean.
You know, I am in love with the truth. It is so simple, so pure. It fears no investigation. The truth is the truth. But if you have a conspiracy, if you have some kind of criminal act that you've done together with other people, which is called a conspiracy, they need to hide them with lies and all types of different things, fear-based. Layers and layers and layers of lies that will then be followed by people getting so freaked out that they start killing each other, and then they're afraid of whistleblowers, so they kill them off, and then, you know, it just goes on and on and on. But the truth fears no investigation, and that is exactly with this as well. There is a female former minister from Israel that has very openly said in an interview on American alternative news that this anti-Semite thing, when we haven't got anything else, we just use that one. You know, I remember I heard, I think it was CNN or Fox News or something like that, there was an expert talking. He was invited on to talk about Building 7, how that came down. And he was talking very openly, it is very obvious controlled demolition. That building, the two towers, a different story, that building controlled demolition. Then they started calling him an anti-Semite and Holocaust denier. And I'm like,
I can never understand. I remember that. I remember anybody who questions 9/11 immediately, oh, you must be an anti-Semite. What does that have to do with anything? Unless you start saying, well, are you implying that I'm saying that Mossad maybe may have something to do with it because Israel wins and it's in their benefit that we go into war with Iraq and the rest of the neighbors in that area of the world?
Well, what can I say? It's like, it's very obvious, isn't it? That it's like, I think Voltaire said that if you want to find out who controls you, find out who you're not allowed to criticize.
Exactly. One of my favorite.
And that was Voltaire.
Yep. One of my favorite quotes.
How many years is that ago? I mean, and he knew. So it's so obvious. I mean, many of these things are no-brainers, I think, you know, and I always use what I call Farmer Brown logic. 1 + 1 = 2. Follow the money. Who benefits? How is it carried out? By whom? And where is it leading us? And in certain areas, we're not allowed to even think that or even put question marks. And right away, if they say that, I go there.
You know, well, let me mention, I don't mean to cut you off, but we have just, you know, about 15, 20 minutes left, and I want to be able to discuss some of the other false flag. Charlie Hebdo, I promised the audience. Charlie Hebdo, again, just days before, the Prime Minister of France was saying that we should not be imposing more sanctions against Russia. Boom, all of a sudden, that happened. And guess what? That soldier, that policeman who was on the floor, and you saw that gunman shooting, I never saw him being shot. And then he found out that the policeman was Jewish. Again, folks, by me mentioning the word Jewish does not mean I'm anti-Semitic. By the way, anti-Semitic would be if I'm against Jews, if I'm against anybody who speaks Arabic or anybody who speaks Aramaic, a lost language. But why is it that when all these events happened, there's always a Jew involved if they're less than 1.5% of the population? The same thing happens to Sandy Hook. We have Gene Rosen there, this old man that supposedly, you know, got all these children coming to him. And, you know, then we have all the other events that have some. Why is that, Ole, that always you have Israel pointing the finger at us or vice versa?
Well, if there's a pattern, I would say that look at it. I just want to correct you. I would say that the police officer that is said to have been shot was Muslim. He was not Jewish.
That's right. Well,
but
go ahead.
If you take Charlie, that makes it even more stupid because they were reacting. They were said to have been Muslims and they were reacting as Muslims. So to shoot a Muslim officer makes it even more stupid. But when you look at that whole Charlie Hebdo, I can do a whole 2-hour thing about that. And I just want to say that also I was able to publicly predict the Copenhagen shooting 1 month before it happened. I went out on several different radio shows saying it's going to happen. It's going to happen in this area, very close to this train station. Boom. 1 month later on the exact hour, boom, it happened. Why? Because I'm extremely intelligent? I think not. But I know how a pie is made, a false flag pie, and I've studied their way of thinking so many years. So that's the whole thing. When it comes to Charlie Hebdo, just one thing that will blow it right open right away is that I think most people have seen when they jump out of this black Citroen, two shooters, they run up. The policeman is rolling around on the pavement and they are said to shoot him in the head, then run back in the car and take off. Now, the car that they used there, that is being filmed there, is a Citroen C3 from 2014 with chrome side mirrors, special wheels from 2014, and with white lamps underneath the headlights. Now, the car that is found abandoned...
Different.
Also, I just want to say that the back window is shot out. It seems to have been crushed or whatever. The car that is then found and in where the forensic investigation is done, where they find the ID, that's very handy to find the ID of the terrorist as well in the back seat, is a Citroen C3 from 2013... with black side mirrors, different wheels, and not the white lamps underneath the headlights. Not the same vehicle. That alone, and I can go on for such a long time about Charlie Hebdo, but that on its own will just blow it right open. And also, by the way, if you are a terrorist, let me see, what should I bring? I'm going to go and kill a lot of people, so I need to shop black clothes, black boots, balaclavas. I got to get automatic weapons, a Kalashnikov, something like that. Anything else I need to remember? Yeah, of course, my driver's license or ID or passport. It's standard. Or the Quran. Let me not forget the Quran. I need to leave that in the car as well. I mean, come on. It's just not very good.
Well, Dan, what do you think was the main reason for the Charlie Hebdo, aside from what I said of the you know, putting the hammer down and saying, no, you will continue adding more sanctions to Russia?
I think that when you look, it was like the spring of 2015, was almost like it took the false flag to a new level. at least here in, around these ones in Europe, not the sloppy ones in the US I'm talking about. But I think that it seems like Mossad took a big step forward there, because suddenly there was a whole different level of quality when it came to planning. To they had a lot of psyops involved in the whole thing, psychological details involved in both the Paris one and in Copenhagen and so on. And right away, problem, reaction, solution. The solution, Benjamin Netanyahu came out saying, we need to bring all the Jewish population in Europe back to Israel. We need to get it out, to evacuate the Jewish population.
By the way, let me just read this. This is something I received days after this. That's why I mentioned that the policeman was not a Muslim. Let me just read this, if I might. Dead French policeman is a Mossad agent alive and well in Buenos Aires, Argentina. Ahmed Merabed, the first French policeman purportedly shot dead, is actually not a Muslim at all. His real name is Avigdor, and his brother's name is Malok, recently changed to Melek, all of them crypto-Jews in the service of Israeli intelligence, i.e. Mossad agents. Avigdor is in Buenos Aires right now and will remain there for 6 years, a standard operating procedure with those deep in Israeli psyops. After this, he will be resurfaced with a new identity, by which time, of course, the populace will have forgotten all about the Paris attacks. I just wanted to mention that.
In that case, I say thank you so much for informing me. I did not know that, so that's... excellent to hear. It's just one more doing the same type of thing, because this is exactly how they do it. You get officially killed somewhere. What happens is you just go underground, or you're being relocated into another country, another continent with a new identity. And then you stay there for 6 years minimum before you're allowed to go anywhere else. And you're paid a bundle in the meantime. So there you go.
The same thing happened with the principal at the Sandy Hook event. Then we saw her also at the Boston bombings. It's the same picture.
It's the same. They use a small crew. They need to keep it small, and they need to stick to really bad actors, because all the good ones are already used and will be recognized. So for a long time, they've been forced to use really bad actors. And one of the things that gives them away is what they call duping delight. If you look at many of these, including the boyfriend of this TV reporter that is now being said to have been killed, absolutely not. Look at them. When they stand talking, are this a person who have just lost the love of his life? Turn down the volume, look at his face. They are smiling. It's a psychological thing called duping delight. When people, their subconscious know that they are tricking us, that they are getting away with manipulating us. Something in the mental image of especially psychopaths make them sort of go yahoo, and you have this thing duping delight. So many of these families and family members of victims or brothers or sisters or whatever, turn down the volume, look at their face. They're smiling. Even though when you hear their words, it's like, my father was just beheaded by ISIS or whatever it is they're saying. You would be totally you would be shattered, you know, sorrow, sadness. All here, they're just smiling. Maybe they go a little... Oh, I'm sad, and that's about it.
But God forbid, Ole, God forbid that this was true and it happened to you or I. Would you be accepting a TV interview just a mere hour or 2 or 3 hours after the event happened, just to talk to the media? Because I saw the media, channel after channel after channel, these people were doing the rounds really quickly, as if they were trying to leverage the moment and the time and the shock. They didn't wait a couple of days. They just waited a couple of hours to come out. And this boyfriend had this 1 month album. That sounded bizarre. Celebrating the love of her life. They've been together for 1 month. It just does not make sense. And I think also, when you look, and I don't mean to bring chemtrails to the equation, but you'll know why. Right now, I'm seeing movies that were old movies that are recreated to show chemtrails. They're adding the chemtrails to commercials, to TV series, almost as if the new generations will see that and think, so what? I was born and chemtrails were around. So after three generations raised on TV, people are trained to suspend this belief and most people don't notice.
I tell you, Mel, they are trying to hammer us from all different directions at the moment. It is full attack on all levels. And especially this September is said to be game over month. You know, this is the big crescendo a la Wagner, you know, the whole shebang at the same time, which will be their big triumph. But I tell you, absolutely not. It's not going to happen because we've just... Too many of us are awake. Too much truth has come out there, and it just won't happen. The same way as Jade Helm was a big, I would say, as far as I know, nothing really happened. They tried to scare the living bejesus out of us so that we would just lie down, bend over, and just let them get away with anything. But we're not.
Well, that's still going. First of all, this radio show is airing on the eve of the 14th anniversary of 9/11. But just about Jed Helm, yeah, many conspiracy theories, if you will, no disrespect to you guys, because I'm one of you, I'm a parapolitical researcher, but what I found that this is more or less preparation to what could be in the future war in the United States. So what the planners are saying, and I did see a video from a former Army person who had a secret clearance. And there's a couple of videos, and he's very, very eloquent and provided information that's public, but he said nobody's looking at it, but it's called Army After Next. Google that, Army After Next. And they have been working on this since 1996, decade after decade, 96, 2006, and 2016, almost in preparation for something. And some of the things behind the scenes are that Israel, our so-called ally, is working behind the scenes with the Chinese and with the Russians, selling weaponry and technology to them. And apparently there's this thing going on since the 1990s where they expected that China's economy would fall. And when it would fall, they would have to go out there to get new resources. So you have Taiwan, which is a renegade island, a republic, if you will. It's still part of China, but they're kind of left alone with their own version of democracy. Apparently, they want to take it back. If they take it back, we have an agreement to intervene. So Jade Helm is in preparation for the first time in the history of the United States to see foreign troops coming here to the United States, and they need to have live drills, as we're seeing with Jade Helm, in certain states. So anyway, that's something that I've been told, Ole.
Mm. We have here in October, we have an upcoming drill, like a European Jade Helm thing, where it's called Trident, and it's 30 different nations with 36,000 troops in Spain, Portugal, and Italy, as far as I know. You know, and also they got like big NATO exercises up in Scandinavia at the same time. I think they're really trying to pull this whole thing together, but it's just not going to work. And after all of these years, I really do not think that we have so much to fear. But at the same time, we need to use this to wake up, because this is the only reason why this madness has been able to go on for so long is because we have been so brain dead and asleep for such a long time. We need to be responsible for this as well by waking up, because every single day that we do not react, innocent people are being slaughtered, killed, victims in this awful game of a small, small, tiny little group that is behind this whole thing that are totally mad. When you look at the mindset behind these people, it's pure madness on a level that is unreal. So let's use this in a totally nonviolent, beautiful way to wake up, and let's do something beautiful with this world instead.
And I think there's a reason why, and good words, by the way, there's a reason why they don't, people say, why is it that Sandy Hook and even the Virginia shooting, you see these people, quote unquote, crying? And why is it that we don't see any tears? I think there's a reason they don't add the tears.
Not crying.
There's a reason why they don't add the tears digitally. They could, but they have the capability. But I think it's more realistic. It's a conscious decision to make them look fake. Again, it could be because they want to be able to identify those of us who go out there. And I haven't been that vocal lately on this Virginia shooting, but, you know, again, do we see the woman fall on the floor? Do we see the body? I mean, not to be graphic or anything, but we have seen when we went to Iraq, we saw the pictures of the two sons of Saddam Hussein, and they were just, you know, they were blown away to pieces, but the media felt very compelled to show that to us so that we knew that we actually get rid of them. But when it comes to all these attacks here in the United States, did we see? I'm not sure. I don't mean to offend anybody who believes this story on Ashley Bailey Parker, the reporter who allegedly died. But unfortunately, unless I see a body that I can inspect myself, I don't take what I hear from the media at face value. And I think it's important not to be conspiracy theorists every single day, but also not to be gullible to the point of believing everything they say, especially when you have the father and the alleged boyfriend come out hours after to tell us that we need stronger or, you know, more regulation when it comes to guns. And I think the only protection, and I know you live in Europe, Ole, and not a lot of my friends in Europe are against me when I say this, because I'm a gun owner and I would never want to kill anybody or any animal unless it was for survival. But the only protection we have from a tyrannical government is the gun. And once the gun is gone, there goes the country and its people. I have absolutely no doubt in my mind, Ole.
I can only agree. I'm a total pro peace. At the same time, if you study history, you look at the dictators, one of the things they do right away is disarm the population. And once that's done, it's just yoo-hoo for the dictator. So I say, by all means, keep the guns, for God's sake. Do not use them if you're not forced to, but keep them. Keep them. Because for the sake of the rest of the world as well, because if the U.S. falls, I tell you, we are in a bad, bad situation in Europe as well.
And by the way, so, what I mentioned about the army after next, this report from this gentleman who was part of the army before, I didn't mean to interrupt you there, but just before I forget, he included some of the things that they're working on, you know, electric vehicles, electric tanks. And in addition to that, DEWs, directed energy weapons. And this is in the year 1996 when this report came out. Anybody can Google it and find it. It was created by the RAND Corporation, this report. And what happened a few days ago in China? Remember that big explosion? And then about a day or two ago, well, we recorded this interview on September the 1st, but a couple of days ago, another explosion, very similar to the one that we saw a few days ago in China. Have you seen those huge explosions where nothing was there, not a building, but it's almost like a shot in the bout for China as a warning to not continue the devaluation of the currency, or if they even try to dump our treasuries?
I tell you, nowadays you have to be so aware of and suspicious to what you're being fed in the news. So I take it very easy before I go into and take these things for real. I want to go back to the Virginia one. You know, once again, just the thing that when you see the hand coming up where he's going to shoot the reporter, mm-hmm. The shirt is blue, and then the image where it said that he caught him, the shooter, with a pistol and everything, he's dressed in black. And also, if you slow down when the camera falls onto the floor and you go frame by frame by frame, you never get that image where you can see the face of the shooter. It is absolute baloney. If there was somebody killed there, you're welcome to come here and chop off my right arm. It is an absolute hoax, staged event, 100%. There are plenty.
There's plenty of footage of the alleged perpetrator. Plenty of footage of him having been a reporter. I give you that. I don't know if he was the one who was there that day. He could be the patsy. That's why police was confiscating the cameras of some BBC reporters who surrounded the vehicle in which he crashed and killed himself. But the Ashley Parker, I haven't been able to find one single report. One single report. Usually, if you're a reporter for a TV station, there's going to be plenty of Google images, plenty of videos on YouTube. Not one, and people don't question that.
And you know, the day before this happened, her dad.
Andy Parker.
That's the guy. He was doing an interview about some river project. But in that interview, the only thing he was talking about was his daughter and how proud he was of her and how this and how that. And it is a staged hoax, all of it. It's the same as this crappy thing that happened in France a few days ago, where we had this Muslim extremist. It said that he wanted to kill some people on a train. So what he did do, he went into the bathroom with his Kalashnikov. He couldn't get the rifle loaded the way he wanted. So there was, just by coincidence, three U.S. Marines on board on this train in France. So they jumped in, took the rifle and everything. Great. So now, right after that, ministers here in Europe say, my God, due to this, we need to have more checkpoints with armed patrols that will stop the international trains and all. It's the same, it's the same, it's the same. And it's absolutely not true. Once you start looking into these photos, when you really start studying, it is totally fake. And by the way, one of the victims that was wounded was actually a quite famous French actor. It's just, I get really tired after a while. You know, it's 30 years of my life, and I'm just wondering, dear population of the world, how much evidence is needed before people start reacting? It is on a level that is not, I mean, you look at the global elite, you see they don't respect us. Is there a reason for them to respect us when they can get away with the same trick again and again, and again, and again, and again, and again? I mean, the only thing they change is the players. They change a little of this and that, and so on. And we say, "Oh my God, it's awful."
Let me give you two more details on this event. I also found advertising paraphernalia, if you will, for Andy Parker running for office. I have a video that shows all that. The LinkedIn page where I mentioned before that he's allegedly a banking headhunter, but also that he's, I mean, there are videos of him in so many TV commercials, TV series. He's the star of the Les Miserables. Also, nobody's talking about the cameraman, Adam Ward. Adam Ward. I found a picture of Adam Ward wearing a White House badge in the White House, taking a picture with the longest correspondent in the history of the White House, Helen Thomas, who passed away not too long ago. But he had a picture with Helen Thomas wearing a White House badge. Could this be a White House employee who all of a sudden decided to get in to play this little game?
Do you know Chris Geo from, I think it's the Revolution Radio? So
yes.
He did a great thing, I think. He went and recorded a phone call he made to, I think it was crisisactors.org, where he applied for a job. And he spoke to the...
I should do that.
It is so good because he spoke to the person who is in charge of the casting, and she's a very nice lady, and she's like, okay, so yes, of course, we got some upcoming events here, so what do you think, what type of role do you think you could fit with? Do you by any chance have a beard? And he said, yeah, I can grow one. Oh, that's excellent, because we need like a headmaster. I think we've got a thing, upcoming thing here in Oklahoma in a month or two. So do you think you could play a headmaster? He said, yeah, for sure. Great, great. Okay, so let's make an appointment. You can come and see the producer here, and let's take it from there. You know, it's just business like usual, but with terrorism. It's unreal, and it's going on right in front of our eyes. And if you see, there's so many new websites popping up offering these type of jobs. You know, do you want to earn some extra money? Come become an extra. We are specialists in terror drills or security drills or whatever. You have them in different NATO countries. You got them in Germany. I've seen several in the US and so on. Who are they recruiting? And please, if you think that this would be a good thing, you know, a great way of earning some extra money, please listen to what Chip Tatum, the CIA whistleblower, said. Once you're in there, great, you will earn some money. If you one day decide that, oof, this is not on anymore, I want out, you will not be able to get out. And also, if you start getting second thoughts, you will be threatened, beaten, killed, or your father, mother, wife, grandmother, daughter, dog will be killed until you decide to behave. So even though you might get well paid while doing it, it is not a good idea for your future, I tell you.
You know, I went to this website of this casting agency the other day, and I was hoping that while I was talking to you, I could go there and read again their contact link, but they changed it. They changed it to a very simple name, email address, that's it, and telephone number. That's it. But what they had when I looked at it over the weekend was name, address, do you have any relatives? Are your parents still alive? Do you have any siblings? How's your relationship with your wife or girlfriend? Tell us about your hobbies. What do you dislike about people? Things along those lines. And I stopped reading after the 20th question, but he had almost like a profile for anybody who wanted to escape and get a new identity. It's incredible. But anyway, we have run out of time. Anything else that you would like to add to tonight's interview, Ole?
I would very much like to end with a prayer, if that's okay.
Please.
I'm not a religious person, but I've got a beautiful, beautiful Raja Yoga teacher that is yoga for the mind. Her name is Nelini Chelaram, and she has this prayer that I absolutely love. And it goes like this. May the entire universe be filled with peace and joy, love and light. May everyone, and especially the ones who hurt us, be filled with peace and joy, love and light. Victory to that light.
Excellent. And I must say that I practice yoga every week. So tell us now, Heikmans, again, how can people buy your book and learn more about your work, Ole?
My website is lightonconspiracies.com. Light on conspiracies. That is exactly what I try to do, to go into the darkest of the darkest corner and spread light. You can also find me on Facebook, Ole Damegaard, or Light on Conspiracies. Also, please sign up for my newsletter, buy my books, donations, these type of things. Extremely appreciated, because I'm just an ordinary guy on my own, trying to do my absolute utmost to help this world the best I can. And one of the things I really try to do is to get on location where it happens, to get out, speak to people, meet people on site and so on, and try to do everything I can to heal these awful traumas in different countries. So I would very much appreciate any type of help, financial, to be able to do that.
Ole Damegaard, an ordinary man doing extraordinary things to get the truth out. Once again, thank you very much for coming over to Veritas. All the best with you and your family. And be safe.
Thank you so much. You too. Sounds great.
All right, my friend. Well, take good care. Adios, mi amigo.
Adios.
Hasta luego.
Hasta pronto.
And that was Ole Damegaard discussing false flags, psyops, and media fakery. All of it thanks to you, Veritas member. Thank you for paving our truth journey every week. And this week, I'll close with a quote by Voltaire. It is difficult to free fools from the chains they revere. Thanks for listening. I'm Mel Fabregas. Until next week, be well.